Support for Radio Boston comes from Hadestown at the Box Center Wang Theater, Broadway's Tony and Grammy-winning Best Musical, an epic celebration of music, togetherness, and hope, raves Forbes. Playing April 23rd through April 28th. Buy your tickets today at boxcenter.org.
Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering. Wow, last night in Charleston, South Carolina, seven Democratic presidential candidates clashed in a messy, raucous, arguably pretty contentious debate in their final meeting before the state's primary on Saturday. In a moment, we're going to talk about all of it and take your calls. But first, some political news closer to home. Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders plans to hold rallies in Massachusetts this weekend, too. Joining us now to talk about that is WBUR senior political reporter Anthony Brooks. Anthony, welcome.
Hi, Tiziana.
All right, so Sanders is campaigning in Massachusetts. There are 14 states voting next Tuesday. He's going to be here twice. What do you make of that?
Well, I mean, it's interesting, right? He's going to be campaigning in Springfield on Friday and Saturday right on Boston Common. And what do I make of it? I think he senses a chance to score a victory on Elizabeth Warren's home turf. And, you know, this announcement by the Sanders campaign follows a recent UMass Lowell poll that found Sanders and Warren in a virtual tie for first place. This was just last week. And if you're the Warren campaign, this is troubling. I mean,
it's a big deal.
It's a huge deal. I mean, if Sanders is in contention in Massachusetts, it's a big deal for Warren. If Sanders wins in Massachusetts, it's an enormous deal for the Warren campaign. You know, she's still looking for her first win since these early contests have begun, or at least, you know, some way to revive her campaign and make a case that she's viable. And if on Super Tuesday, Massachusetts goes into Sanders' column, that's really dire for her.
All right. So given the existential nature of this, how is her campaign and how is she responding?
Well, I mean, I think Warren's supporters were buoyed by her strong performance last week in Las Vegas. I know you guys are going to be talking about how she did in the debate last night. Lots of money flowed in after the debate. That's compelling. She's also making a case that something like 147 state and local and city officials have endorsed her. And clearly she's got a lot of support here in Massachusetts. So that's what the campaign is focusing on. And we're going to know soon enough how that plays out.
All right. Before we let you go, because we are going to turn to the debate analysis in a minute. But I mean, you've been doing this a long time. You have seen a lot of debates. Last night was interesting. I'd really love to just get sort of your headline take, your reaction to what you saw last night.
Yeah, I was watching mud wrestling and a debate broke out, I guess, to borrow a Rodney Dangerfield line. I don't know. I was disappointed with the moderators because I'd almost felt like, I mean, to go back to Rodney Dangerfield, it almost felt like a hockey game where they were like standing back and sort of saying, hey, folks, this is part of the entertainment. I thought it was a mess. It was truly a mess. But it also pointed to the stakes. I mean, so many people had so much to prove. This is sort of do or die for Joe Biden in South Carolina. There was that issue. There was Bernie Sanders as the front runner taking hits from everybody. There was the continuing Warren trying to dismantle Bloomberg for obvious reasons. So there was a lot going on. This was everybody's last chance before Super Tuesday to reach a big audience. And I think that's what you heard and saw in that sound and noise and fury last night.
All right. Well, we will be following along with you over the next week or so. That's Anthony Brooks, WBUR senior political reporter. I appreciate you making the time, Anthony.
My pleasure.
All right. Well, as Anthony said, it was wild. It was crazy. It was messy. It was South Carolina last night.
My entire career has been wrapped up in dealing with civil rights and civil liberties.
As Democrats, we need to speak to the future we can build together.
The answer is for us to break the corporate stranglehold on our government and have the government work for the people again.
And I think having someone that keeps their promises and follows through and is going to get things done for this people matters.
The time has come for us to stop acting like the presidency is the only office that matters. Not only is this a way to get Donald Trump reelected, we got a house to worry about.
Let me finish. If you keep on going, we will elect Bernie. Bernie will lose to Donald Trump. And Donald Trump and the House.
I'm hearing my name mentioned a little bit tonight. I wonder why.
Is it bad that I'm so psyched to have the conversation with the two of you? This is going to be fun, y'all. So here to break it down with us is Susan Tracy. She's a Democratic strategist, president of the Strategy Group. Thanks for being with us. And Tito Jackson, former Boston City Councilor and CEO of Verdant Medical, a Massachusetts medical and recreational cannabis company. Tito, thanks for being here.
Thank you so much.
And we want you to be a part of it, too. Pull up a chair. Let's talk about this. Did you watch the debate? What'd you think? Did anything change your mind? Do you think differently today than you did before you saw that last night? Do you know who you're going to vote for next Tuesday? Join the conversation. 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Or you can tweet us at Radio Boston. Susan, what's your big headline from last night?
Well, I actually think I agree with Anthony. I think the moderators should have done a better job at moderating that debate. So I keep finding myself thinking, can't you turn the mics off? You know, if you have a minute 30 to answer. So that's one side. You know, just the whole chaos of the debate, I think, was really a management of the debate issue. I think if I looked at what the takeaways were, I think the stakes were probably highest last night for Joe Biden. And, you know, could Joe Biden survive that race? Because if he doesn't win in South Carolina, I think, you know, I think it's probably the end of his campaign. I think he did survive. I think he did a good job. And I think if you were a voter who thought, I want to vote for Biden, but I'm not sure, I think he gave you some assurance like that's a good vote to cast. That's my gut.
So I want to listen to a little sound before we get Tito's reaction, because I feel like this both captures the chaos of last night, but also the way people were jockeying to come out on top. Let's listen to some sound here.
Let's talk about
Let's
math.
Talk
indeed.
About math.
Okay,
if
so here's the math.
Nothing,
no, here's the math.
But can I respond to
doing
the
nothing
attack?
Is what
excuse
will
me,
happen.
Senator Sanders, you're allowed a quick response, and then we would like to allow
this,
the other people.
Moderator, guys.
Senator Sanders.
Moderator, is my turn.
So you have like four layers going on there. This is about details. Audiences booing. People yelling over each other. No one can tell whose turn it is. Tito.
The rumble in the jungle. The Thriller in Manila and Charleston.
I love it.
I love WWF and WWE. This was the Royal Rumble, but they didn't actually have an official
a ref.
In the room. I guess I absolutely agree with my colleague that Joe Biden survived this.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's actually buoyed by Representative Clyburn's support of him.
A prominent African-American elected official
yes.
in South Carolina who,
yes.
who endorsed him today.
Yes, which is a great thing. I kind of look at this thing as king of the hill or king or queen of the hill.
Interesting.
Bernie's on top, and right, you have to, and it's much harder to kind of get up there. He has some leverage down. I think Elizabeth has thrown, Senator Warren has actually thrown Bloomberg off the mountain several times over, and people are kind of jockeying to get up that hill. I don't believe there was a change in terms of where people stand. I think
mm-hmm.
there's a top tier, kind of middle tier that's being jockeyed around. And you're right. I believe that this is a huge state for Joe Biden, and really will determine whether or not he continues
Absolutely.
On.
Yeah. So, Susan, you know, building on what Tito just said, going into the debate last night, mm-hmm. I was pretty sure that the person with the target on their back was Bernie Sanders. And we even heard in that montage at the beginning where he said, I'm hearing my name come up a lot tonight. By the end of the debate, I'm not convinced. I thought he was the one that took the most number of hits. Was he the one with the target on his back? And was that effective for the other candidates? Because it kind of felt like Mike Bloomberg wound up in people's sights.
Well, I do think Bernie had a target on his back. I think everyone went after him, except for Warren to some extent. She went a little bit, but went lightly. I think, you know, you'd have to and she went after Bloomberg the hardest. Let's be clear about that.
And we'll come back to that.
Right. So I do think Bernie had a target on his back. I think he was rattled. I don't think he was knocked down, but I think he was rattled.
You think he was rattled?
I do. I think he was rattled last night.
Cuba.
I do. I think he was rattled last night and healthcare. I think there were a couple of moments where he was really pushed hard. As I said, I don't think he got knocked down, but I think there are some cracks there that, you know, could become larger as this campaign goes on. But I think the, you know, significant attack on Bloomberg really comes from Warren.
So that's really interesting. You know, Anthony was saying just a couple of minutes ago the existential battle that Warren and Sanders could be in. And you just said, you know, she pushed more on Bloomberg than Sanders. This was about the hardest she pushed on Sanders, and it was really in the debate.
Bernie and I agree on a lot of things, but I think I would make a better president than Bernie. And the reason for that is that getting a progressive agenda enacted is going to be really hard, and it's going to take someone who digs into the details to make it happen.
Tina, is that enough?
I don't know that it's enough, but I think what she gets to say this consumer board that she put forward that post the banking crisis, that she was actually able to get something done. I think, but the difficulty is for Democrats in this last six, seven years, it's been pretty tough to get anything done across the board. And so I think it's a compelling statement, but I don't believe that that shifts people over. And I think it speaks to the difficulty that Elizabeth Warren has with Bernie to her left. And then you have people who are, you know, riding the hell out of the middle lane, mm-hmm. right? And mm-hmm. and really trying to pull people over to that side. And then with her going along with the Medicare for All and then kind of coming back and saying, hey, we have to have some implementation criteria, I think it makes it a really difficult ride for her in making that assertion.
1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK to join the conversation, which we want you to do. Pull up a chair at the table. Katie's on the line from Newton. Katie, what's on your mind?
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I was really interested in the crowd's reaction last night to the debate. It really struck me as incredibly amplified, more so than other debates, and in particular around Bloomberg, Liz, and Bernie. I felt like there was such an amazing cheering section for Bloomberg almost, and really kind of took me by surprise. And conversely, I felt like Liz and Bernie got a ton of negative reaction, like very loud, audible negative reaction from the crowd. And you know, I think my only takeaway and my only rationale for this was that it reflects the real sentiment of the country, which is that they're hoping for, you know, a more moderate center of the lane candidate. And I just couldn't tell if that was other people's read or if I'm way off base or what people made of it.
So let me illustrate it. And then, Susan, I'm going to come to you. So this is an exchange with Mike Bloomberg and Bernie Sanders. Listen to the crowd.
Mayor Bloomberg, I'll let you respond to that. Do you think Senator Sanders' economy would be better for America than President Trump?
I think that Donald Trump thinks it would be better if he's president. I do not think so. Vladimir Putin thinks that Donald Trump should be president of the United States. And that's why Russia is helping you get elected, so you'll lose to him.
And then Bernie Sanders in response.
Hey, Mr. Putin. If I'm president of the United States, trust me, you're not going to interfere in any more American elections.
Okay, and the crowd after that's like, ah! So what to make of that?
I don't know that there's a lot to make of it, to tell you the truth. I think that, as I understand it, because I know there was some talk about who's in the crowd and did they sell seats. As I understand it, every campaign got the same number of tickets and they were allowed to have a section of their own supporters. What I would say is, in some ways, it doesn't surprise me that the crowd would react to Bernie and Warren, because they're the most – think about Pete Buttigieg, very steady, you know, hardly one you're going to jump out of your seat for, right? Amy Klobuchar, very steady. Tom Steyer, pretty steady. So, you know, getting a crowd reaction to Bernie and Elizabeth and Biden – they're the kind of big, boisterous ones in the group.
And that's fair, but either to you or Tito, I will admit that there were a number of times while I was watching last night where I was thinking, I don't remember this kind of booing and cheering. I watched a lot of debates this year, and that felt different to me. Am I wrong?
No, I think it was a really energized crowd. But I think we're right before Super Tuesday. The stakes are so much higher. People are so much more excited. And I don't actually yet get to do this for a living, but like the people who are in these rooms are the folks who really, really nerd out on this type of thing, right?
Yeah.
So I think you felt that energy in the room, and some of it was kind of like, ooh, I guess cafeteria-like mm-hmm. when it came to kind of pointing the finger at someone.
And don't you think you also got that because of what we talked about earlier, which is it wasn't moderated in a way that was controlled.
That is true. So it was a free-for-all.
I think that falls into the audience, too.
Okay, so I want to take a minute now because one of the people I enjoyed following on Twitter most last night was, I think he would refer to himself as former Republican Tom Nichols. He is on the phone with us now. He's a professor of national security affairs at the U.S. Naval War College in Newport, Rhode Island. He also teaches at the Harvard Extension School. And we do try to bring a Republican voice into this analysis because there are people watching who are going to vote in the general election. So let's give Tom a couple of minutes here. Tom, you were certainly sort of dialing up the exclamation points on Twitter last night. What was your reaction to the debate?
Well, first, let me jump in and, of course, start by saying I don't represent the Naval War College, and I am a former Republican. A couple of things. First, I just want to pile in with everybody else and say that was one of the worst moderated debates I've ever seen. The questions were terrible. The moderators lost control early. There was a lot of – I am not a big fan of Mike Bloomberg, but the animus among the moderators for Bloomberg was obvious and distracting. And what I thought by the end of it is that if the Democrats don't get serious about basically thinning this herd, I mean, I think this is really has to come down to sort of Biden versus Bernie and then let the Democrats decide how they want to go with this. Donald Trump is going to be president again. And
is the field too big right now, Tom, in your mind?
It's been too big from the get-go, and Tom Perez deserves a lot of the blame for this.
He's the head of the Democratic National Committee. So,
yes,
go ahead.
And it really struck me that, you know, people like, Michael Bennett and Steve Bullock and others were pushed off the stage while at the very end we were still having to deal with Andrew Yang and Tulsi Gabbard. And, you know, I mean, it's just the rules were kind of crazy and weeded out people with experience in favor of people who were kind of good at being on the internet.
Tom, that sounds exactly like the Republican side in 2016.
Yes, and this is why the former Republicans and the Never Trumpers are pleading with the Democrats, don't do what we did. Yeah. Don't make the same mistakes we did, because the difference between Donald Trump and Bernie Sanders is that Donald Trump has a cult behind him. He has people that are going to show up. Bernie Sanders is going to divide your party. And I think you're going to end up losing to Donald Trump. But I think people like, for example, Elizabeth Warren is making exactly the mistake that Ted Cruz made, which is I won't attack the most extreme guy standing next to me because when he somehow fades, I'm going to pick up his voters. And that'll be, that'll be my lane. I think everybody going after Bloomberg, sure, it makes sense. But again, it tells you something about how dysfunctional this primary was, that a party that has sworn to get money out of elections had two billionaires on the stage who bought their way into the debate when governors and senators and Cory Booker and Kamala Harris and other people had been wiped out early on. There's something very wrong with this primary, and it's going to produce, I think it's probably going to produce Bernie Sanders unless Biden kind of pulls a rabbit out of his hat in the next few days.
So,
and it's going to be a disaster.
Tom, I want to pull a quote that Tom Steyer had from the debate last night, talking about the challenge of the Democratic Party. And unfortunately, I think the team thought I was going to a different cut. So this is one where Steyer talks about the challenge for the Democrats if there's a... Yeah, let's go.
We are looking at a party that has decided that we're either going to support someone who's a Democratic socialist or somebody who has a long history of being a Republican.
So, Tom, can you stay on the line?
Sure.
Okay. Tito and Susan, your reactions, because you were both nodding and hands were going up and there was all kinds of reactions.
I think we like former Republicans.
I agree with everything you've said. I think my question would be, how do you do it? How do you do it at this stage of the game? Well, if what we're saying is we need to whittle this field down and have it be a Biden and Bernie race, how do you do that? The problem that we've run into is that we have a number of candidates who can keep money coming in, can keep raising, who it's not easy for them to simply drop off. So how do you get there? And, I'd ask if you were running the Republican race 4 years ago, what would you have done with Cruz and Kasich and Rubio? And how would you get there?
I can tell you what I would have done with Trump and that I think you should have done with Bernie. I think if you're running a national party, the first criterion is that you actually have to be a member of that party.
Yep.
I argued early on, you can take a look at things I wrote, tweets, an article that I wrote that said the Republican Party should just, as they did with David Duke and others, say, look, Donald Trump's not a Republican. If he wants to run third party, let him run third party. I think one of the ways this field should have been culled a year ago is to say, look, if you want to run in Democratic primaries and be on our stage, you actually have to, oh, I don't know, join the Democratic Party.
Let's grab a caller on this. 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Brian from Natick, go ahead.
Hey, how you doing? Thanks for taking my call. So I watched it with, I'm originally from the Midwest. I have a lot of family still in the Midwest who are Republicans. I also have a lot of friends in Republican circles. And unfortunately, I think what comes across in these debates is with Bernie, the more emphatic he is with pushing his message, I think the reason that the party is pushing, you know, Bernie's as kind of the front runner is that he's able to energize a base that's as radical as almost what the base was for Trump. And I think the party is thinking we're going to be able to energize this base that's going to have this huge swell, you know, take over the country and want Bernie to be president and push him forward to be able to beat Trump. The problem is that that base is mostly on the East and West Coast, where you already lost the election, right, even though you had more votes in those areas. That message from Bernie and the people to the left doesn't resonate with the moderate Republicans or the middle Democrats in the Midwest.
Let's pick it up from there, Brian. Thank you. Tito, what do you think?
But I think one of the things that people are underestimating about Bernie, and I do think when we speak about cult followings and people who are able to fill stadiums and get the energy going, this moderation component, it's cold in a lot of these places. You got to knock on doors and get people pulled out. I believe that there's a groundswell of people who are going to rock out for Bernie. In addition, I don't know if you guys hear this, but I hear a lot of libertarians who actually are Bernie fans.
Interesting.
Right? And so there are folk who are on that kind of edge. I also believe, and I think Tom brought it up, the fact that billionaires can buy their way into the Democratic primary side of things, when there are, in particular, people of color who've been pushed out, I think that speaks to where we are as a party. And it's very, very problematic, and we've allowed it to happen. So I think the question is, how do we get back together, and whether or not people can galvanize around one candidate? Because the real issue, the reason why we're here, is none of these candidates have knocked us off our feet. We come time and time again, and we determine Klobuchar was able to do really well in New Hampshire because of the closing that she gave.
In Nevada.
Nevada.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, Tom, go ahead.
Can I just make a point here from the other side of the bleachers, which is, this notion that Bernie is going to energize new voters. First of all, that didn't happen in New Hampshire. It didn't happen in Iowa. This is, a kind of selling point by Sanders when, in fact, he's been losing votes since 2016. But the bigger problem is he energizes people that are less likely to show up in the first place. And there's a second problem here, which is that I think that a Sanders nomination is a permission slip for a lot of people who are willing to walk away from Donald Trump, or at least to kind of be neutral. See, the notion that you're going to convert Trump voters is wrong. That I have argued against anybody who thinks that's possible. You don't convert a cult. But I think Bernie ends up depressing at least some of the Democratic turnout, because remember, you're only trying to win back four or five states. It doesn't matter if you pull in an extra 5 million votes from California.
So, I'm going to jump in here, Tom. I don't have time to go to another call, but we have a caller who is saying, lifelong Democrat, after last night, I'm disgusted and I want to vote third party. And then we had somebody who came in on Twitter, Sean Connolly, saying, my plan is to vote for Sanders, but I didn't watch the debate last night for my own mental health. I feel like I made the right choice. So, Susan, let me turn to you. What needs to happen? Okay, so we are where we are as a country.
Yep.
The candidates in the Democratic Party are where they are. What needs to happen now for a viable Democratic nominee to come forward and have a chance in the general election?
Well, I think watching what happens with Biden this weekend is really important. I do think that if Biden wins, I think you could see some coalescing around his candidacy. I do. Because what I have found in everybody that I talk to who's a Democrat is what really drives most people is, which candidate can beat Trump. And that is, and in some ways, I feel like that's created some of the chaos. I think people aren't willing to commit to anybody because all they care about is beating Trump. So I think, I do think a Biden victory does change things. I think if Biden does not win this week, I think Bernie takes off. And I think the other thing we'll learn on Super Tuesday is just how much money does matter. Because I think if Bloomberg is able to do well in those 14 states, we will tell ourselves that money indeed is critical.
All right. That's Susan Tracy. She's a Democratic strategist and president of the Strategy Group. Thank you, Susan.
Absolutely.
Also, Tito Jackson, former Boston City Councilor and CEO of Verdant Medical. Thanks, Tito.
Thank you.
And Tom Nichols on the phone, professor of national security affairs at the U.S. Naval War College and professor at the Harvard Extension School. Thanks, Tom.
Thank you.
Hey, thanks for being with us, callers. Stay tuned. We're going to talk about education when we come back. There's more ahead. I'm Tiziana Deering. This is Radio Boston.